United, we'll never be the biggest people.
I think the news midweek, when the midweek news broke that Teo Dezar wasn't going to be playing in this game.
Growing sport, and to do it on a university campus with an educational message behind it.
They'll be facing off against all the big teams from all the other conferences and the nationals.
Want to be a CITR sports broadcaster? Looking for a cool way to get involved in UBC sports? Then email sports101@citr.ca or come by our station in the Nest to find out more. See you soon.
We got a theory.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. We know how magnets work.
That's right.
If magic is all we've ever known, then it's easy to miss what really goes on. But I've seen miracles in every way, and I see miracles every day.
And welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show here on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. Both are flagship stations in the Vancouver area, Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, and streaming online at cooprio.org, and on CITR 101.9 FM, and streaming online at citr.ca. So, I guess, Michael, you're in White Rock now?
I am in White Rock. I was on assignment again with another conversation that we will get up on air next week.
Yep. All right. Sounds good.
Yeah. So it's pretty exciting stuff.
All right.
So yeah. Yes. So today, though, we have our favorite representative of the BC Disability Caucus.
Paul Gilbert.
Yeah, he's on the conference call with me right now.
Yes, greetings.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. Yes, we're it's been an interesting times we've been living in.
Right. We have.
Yeah.
So many things have happened. Christy Clark resigning as both MLA and Liberals. Of course, our new leader, Premier John Horgan, is in the news. Everything's all changing day by day.
Yeah, it's exciting times. We're free of the Liberal menace. Of course, it didn't change one thing. I was just talking to Michael about the fact that Lindsay Kynes in the Victoria Times columnist was trumpeting about Michelle Stilwell being an advocate for the disabled and for children with special needs and her job plan for single parents with disabilities being such a wonderful thing.
I just want to correct myself. It's not Paul, it's John Horgan. Sorry, John.
John.
Yes, John. Sorry, John, if he's listening.
But anyway, that's the sort of, I think the Times columnists and other papers need to update their coverage of the disabled because they do such an abysmal job of it. They don't address our needs or talk about our needs at all. Right. For the most part, they just take people who aren't meeting them and pat them on the back.
Right.
Not good. So we need an improvement there.
Michael?
Yeah, we were talking about that before we actually got on air. It's like, you know, handing somebody a dead end job is not giving them a hand up, you know.
Well, people with disabilities not only suffer, have the half the employment rate of people without. They also have reduced job quality because they're usually micromanaged and in employment. So their employment circumstances are quite dire and haven't been improving in decades. And these jobs, the BC jobs plan and things like it have not done anything except made it look like the government's interested. That they actually haven't made any difference for people with disabilities except repetitive low-wage precarious work followed by unemployment that goes on. So it's we need that's why we were encouraging the BC government to have a ministry of disability issues,
right?
Because our issues are complex.
Right,
and you can't just slap together a program asking a few experts and it's going to work. They don't even know much about how the population of people with disabilities in BC to begin with. There's all sorts of groups of people with disabilities that aren't counted. Aboriginal, indigenous populations, they don't know. There's a very high percentage that are disabled, but nobody's keeping track of that. And people in institutions, they don't know how many are disabled there. And so we have somewhere between 700,000 and over a million people with disabilities in BC, but...
Well, the thing of it is no one's willing to also... If you want to help a group of people, go ask them what it is they need help with. Don't assume that you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when has anybody as yet done that?
Yeah, the limited surveys that they've done haven't been very good, and there's a lot of gaps in knowledge. Often when you research things about people with disabilities, you have to go to other countries to find out what they've discovered about their populations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It doesn't stop at working. It goes all across the board with just about every aspect of life. You know, what is needed to help that person, and you can't just put a blanket over it.
You're right. Well, that's one of the things that they're proper. I mean, even with vocational rehabilitation, when they're talking about getting people back to work, to do it properly, you really have to be working with the person and finding out what their needs are and what opportunities actually exist.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the disabled are marginalized in every aspect of their lives. And the things like the family income clawback in BC doesn't help them because people with disabilities usually end up single because if they're living with somebody, they get even less money per month. Or if they're married to somebody who's not on disability, they don't get anything.
Right. They assume that the perfectly able person is able to take up all the slack. And it may not always be the case, especially with today's economy.
Yes.
You know?
And being dependent and powerless after being together for 3 months with somebody is not a very safe place to be.
Right.
No. Well. No. That would be kind of scary. What do you think, Kelly?
It can be very scary at sometimes. I've noticed one of your postings on BC Disability Caucus on another issue on women and disabilities and violence. It can be very scary as well.
Oh yes, it's a major problem. Violence against women with disabilities is at least 2 to 3 times higher, depending upon where you look. And the population itself, for women with mental health
right.
issues, it's astronomical. Putting them in a position where they're powerless is just asking for problems.
Right.
So we keep on advocating for them to quit clawing back family income so that people with disabilities can be independent.
Mm-hmm.
The NDP is just sort of getting their house in order and we've not heard anything from them, really.
No.
We're looking forward to their poverty reduction plan, where maybe people will be able to bring these things up.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you posted on the issues, especially the issues on women and disability and violence. And one of them, one of the high rates, it says that Darwin RAFH, I don't know what this stands for, the Canada study that found although 1 in 5 of all Canadian women live in disability, 40% response have experienced from violence in their lives. It just blows you away on those kind of those kind of facts there.
It's terrifying for to think about people being in those circumstances. We had people commenting on that post, talking about their own experiences, and one woman was saying this is the second time she had a partner that tried to kill her.
It's a shame.
People shouldn't be living in those circumstances. I mean, considering the social determinants of health and the level of stress you're going to get if you're in that sort of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
It's no surprise that people end up with health conditions on top of health conditions when they're that poor and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
Yeah, vulnerability is it's not an easy place to be. You know, especially when if you have a system that tends to forget you. And it leaves you with an abuser, right?
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. And honestly, I mean, people are people. And if all of a sudden after 3 months you leave some guy or some woman completely in the role of the breadwinner, it doesn't bode well for the relationship.
No.
I mean, people with disabilities shouldn't have to be single for their entire lives simply because the government wants to claw back money.
Well, yeah, and also we also had the fact that we had senior care homes. This was under the Liberal government that we had senior care homes separated from single hospitals. Am I recall for that?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very sad news on that front. And I can imagine a lot of elderly disability people, the senior disability people are kind of sad that most of those couples, family couples that have been separated and want to come back living together.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly, that sort of stress on your life increases your mortality and quality of life. I mean, quality of life when you're in your last years should be a concern for people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why privatization has been such a problem. Treating these people as an income stream is not very humane.
No, of course.
Yeah.
Not.
Oh, that's exactly what care homes do. I only know of a handful of organizations that that operate with the idea of, hey, let's protect our elderly instead of using them as an income source. So.
Yeah, I'm. My mother died just before going into a care home. She had health conditions that had to be monitored continually, but it was good in a sense that she managed to pass away before having to be faced with that.
It's a shame.
Yeah. The back to Christy Clark's departure.
Yeah.
We've got Rich Coleman being the premier at the moment, or the official
Liberal
opposition leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Official opposition leader.
Right.
So we have orthodoxy in place, I imagine.
Right. So what are the official opposition doing these days?
They're supposedly getting themselves organized for and assigning themselves roles right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're going for crusty rolls or soft ones, but they're assigning themselves positions of to work from. And of course, a lot of them were given positions in that week-long Liberal government that Christy Clark set up.
Right.
Yeah, Sam Sullivan went from being a backbencher to Minister of Community, Sport, and Cultural Development. Yeah, and
the critic.
Yes. He was minister, but I will imagine he'll be a critic.
Hmm.
As far as I can tell, the only thing he did really is his role as an MLA was promote the sale of alcohol for any business, which, when you consider health how toxic alcohol is, I don't think selling it everywhere for all the time is necessarily a good thing.
No. When you're talking about the sale of something that that also has a social problem of addiction that rides along with it,
mm-hmm.
one would think that if you're going to you want to limit that sale, two, you want to make sure that you're promoting along with it a way for people to get help with the addiction that might come with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I have some very mixed feelings about being able to sell alcohol all the time. So
yeah, you're getting your hair cut and drunk at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you walk out with a fresh haircut and go driving down the block and kill a little kid on the street. There you go.
Yeah. No, it's completely irresponsible, really. I mean, the fact that the government had liquor stores that they privatized, for one way, the revenue stream isn't going to go back into providing supports for people who are having problems with addiction. It's going to go into somebody's pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that things like that, you have to worry about society enough to take those issues so that you're actually protecting the public.
And that's one thing I thought the role of government was to help protect the people, not put them in harm's way. So,
yeah. Well, the government is us. I mean, the people who are always calling for small government, they keep on forgetting that what they're talking about is privatized government, where people are making a profit off of things that used to be looked after for people. So,
right.
We used to have a Ministry of Highways where people looked after the roads, and now we have private contractors that do it.
Right.
It's not necessarily, I mean, that's not something we can't contract out. It's just that why should public services be done for profit?
Mm-hmm.
No, the public services shouldn't be done for profit, but then again, if you're going to privatize them, why is it that they should be given maybe a program where they're given a tax credit or, you know, something other than actually handing them back, something that they can really make a serious profit on. You know, they should get exactly the cost back again, not so much the I made a profit sort of thing off of it. I don't know. And it's kind of tough when one has never seen the program that you're trying to describe. It's kind of tough to describe it because it's always been, hey, if you're going to go private, then the company that takes on, they want to make a profit. They're not doing it out of the kindness of their heart.
Yeah, and generally that means when you privatize a public good, it means that you have a lower quality of service and higher costs.
Mm-hmm.
And the government doesn't monitor what happens afterwards because that would be incredibly expensive. So they just leave it and let them go ahead and do whatever they're doing, mm-hmm. which has been a major problem in seniors care across Canada for years, but there's not been any intervention to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. The amount of senior-on-senior violence in care homes and has been really a major problem. There's actually been murders in care homes and sexual yes. assaults. But the government keeps on washing its hands of the issue. I'm hoping yes. that the NDP government will take that issue seriously so seniors can be safe in their old age.
Yeah. And Kelly, you said it's time for a break, right?
Yes, that's correct. Stay there for a moment while we take a break. I'll put you on hold. So you're tuning in to the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Networks. We will be back in a moment. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of each year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting exclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adaptive technology, and more. For more information, contact your local stations about the National Access Day.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know.
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Cool. Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
Become a CITR member and make some new friends.
Members get discounts downtown at Little Sisters Book and Art Emporium, the Cinematheque, the Fall Tattooing, Selectors Records, Community Thrift and Vintage, Vinyl Records, Sakura's, Classical Records, and Beat Street Records.
What would we do without our friends?
All right, we're back on the program here on the Community Living Show. I'm, of course, Kelly Rayburn. Along with me is Michael Rubin on the phone and Paul Gilbert, who is the BC Disability Caucus member. So I want to switch topics now. This is on the this was published on the Globe and Mail, and you reposted it. You shared it with everybody, which is very nice. You know, that's my phone. I'll have to shut that off. Anyways, VRail seeks to, the title is VRail seeks to limit scope of wheelchair and mobility aid possibility. So that's the headline. The whole comment saying about VRail is they're trying to limit scope of policy to make its trains more accessible to travelers using wheelchair and mobility aids. The national rail provider had revised its policy in May to compliance with an order from Canadian Transportation Agency, which directed VIA to double the number of mobility devices that could tie down on trains for one or two. The ruling is prompted by a complaint to the CTA, the Canadian Transportation Authority, for married couples who asserted the old rules barred from traveling together. I guess this is some sort of a news on that, Paul.
Yes. There was a. It's a story that's been going on for a while, yeah. And the oversight body, which is the Canadian Transport Agency, it's an independent body. They ruled that VRail had to accommodate so that more people can travel together. But VRail is trying to not do that. And the interesting thing is that Marc Garneau, who is the minister for transportation, et cetera. Federal minister, yes. Mm-hmm. He oversees all the federally regulated transportation. He's responsible for both Via Rail and for the oversight body. So I thought maybe I emailed the disability critic, the Minister of Disability Issues, and Mark, and hopefully in some discussion in the House they'll dredge up the fact that this is something he's sort of responsible for. I mean, the oversight body might be independent, but Via Rail isn't.
Right.
So I'm hopeful that he'll tell Via that they need to comply.
That would be the hope, right? That they are forced to comply, you know?
Yeah, it's scary a bit when you have all these bodies that I think the all these bodies that are federally regulated, they seem to more or less operate on their own. There's not a lot of oversight that seems to take place.
Right.
Otherwise, employment equity would actually have come to something since 1986. Employment equity in federally regulated companies hasn't really materialized into anything. But yes, that's the Via Rail crisis. The Council of Canadians with Disabilities has been trying to encourage Via Rail for years to be more accessible for people with disabilities, but they haven't gotten very far yet. Unfortunately, they've had some wins, but Via is not as accommodating as one would like.
Right.
Is there maybe a budget problem or something that they're being so?
I believe that the issue is that some of the train lines that they're working with, it would be difficult to accommodate two wheelchairs at the same time. But I mean, this is not something new. I mean, these issues have been going back for decades. It's not like Via Rail couldn't have had trains that were accessible. I mean, when you're talking about the oversight of Via Rail and trying to make sure they're accessible for people with disabilities, it's going back decades, and they've just not been making sure that's happening.
Well, I kind of see Via Rail as more like of a travel agency situation where you've got trains from, well, I mean, there are a lot of people from outside of the country wanting to experience our Canadian National Historic Railway across the country. And you can probably see why, not just from our perspective on disabilities, but maybe from other countries that deal with disabilities from across the globe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be. All our transportation systems should be accessible. I mean, there was a case recently of somebody with a giant wheelchair that couldn't get on a plane.
Yeah.
It's understandable sometimes with the size of wheelchairs out there, but all transportation is supposed to be accessible. Communications industries are supposed to be accessible. They're they're all under the Employment Equity Act, but it's a voluntary compliance. They mostly just count what they're doing and report back, but they don't actually move forward on the issues that need to be moved forward on. Mm-hmm. To make the world more accessible for people with disabilities.
Right.
We need a disability act.
Yeah. Well, Michael?
There's some question as to whether or not we'll get a disability act.
There's always been a lot of talk about a disability act, but
Well, they won't even sign the optional protocol right now for the UN Convention on Human on Disability Rights. So I'm not sure. It makes me wonder if the Liberals will actually have a Disability Act before the next election.
Yeah.
It was more of an NDP platform item than a Liberal platform item.
I was going to say something like it's pretty much similar to what's happening with the Disability Act, the First Nations Act, the Queer and Gender Act. There's probably be several issues among not just on top of the Disability Act, but, you know, the three of them I just mentioned on there as well.
Yeah. I mean, yes, we're marginalized populations aren't have a very hard time getting things changed. I thought it was very, very commendable that we have human rights protections for transgender people, but it hasn't stopped the murder rate.
No.
We still have to have social change I think government should be taking responsibility for trying to do social change and cultural change around these issues, because people shouldn't be vulnerable. They shouldn't be left to high and dry, worrying about protecting themselves when the law says that they're protected.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, one of the things that I thought was interesting about the change in the government from the NDP from the Liberals to the NDP is the possibility of proportional representation. It if you look down at the breakdown of how the votes were split last election, if public proportional representation was in place, you'd still have an NDP Green government, but the Liberals would be a fringe party. Maybe the Liberals should be a fringe party?
Yeah.
Well, it could be the same situation for the Bloc Québécois moving over to British Columbia or the Parti Québécois moving over to British Columbia.
Oh, I'd love that. We'd have we'd all start learning French.
Yeah.
Yes, but I know that we're not going to see a lot of progressive ideas coming out of the Liberals with Rich Coleman there. He thinks that people who can't find affordable housing are whiners. I'm not expecting much there. But the lineup of who they have running, I mean, they're the same sort of people, same sort of neoliberal. Let's look after the wealthy and leave everybody else to their own devices, sort of people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think that they should be a fringe party, because why should the population be voting in a government that caters to the wealthy and leaves everybody else to their own devices? They should have a government that represents them.
Right.
Yeah. That's the point. Government is supposed to be representative of the masses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's. Did you there was a interesting thing on the welfare wall that keeps on coming up in stories. Kelly, you sent me a copy a story on that.
I'm just looking through Community Living Radio Show here. And, of course, you can always check us out, too. Facebook.com/community-living-show, radio-show. Just to let listeners know. You can check us out anytime on Facebook. What was the thing you were asking?
Well, there was a major report call on the welfare wall affecting people. They mostly spoke about people on income assistance, but they were
right.
They were talking about people with disabilities primarily. And
okay.
What happens is you get basic support if you're on disability, and then you get special assistance on top of that. But first, you have to be on disability to get the basic.
Yep.
You have to get the basic support, and then you can get special assistance if you have that. So it's a sort of a trap to the only place you can get the special assistance, like the wheelchair or the adaptive aids you need to live, is if you remain on welfare.
Right.
So you're in this trap there. And that trap includes all sorts of clawbacks, like the clawback on CPP and the clawback on family income and the clawback on all a whole host of clawbacks. So they keep you in poverty while you're trying to survive. But they were suggesting remedies for that sort of welfare wall problem where people could get special assistance if they're low income.
Right.
So if you're low income, the government will help you get a wheelchair or help you get your bathroom adapted, or they do that already. But there's all sorts of things that people. The point is that having a disability is more expensive than not having a disability.
Right, I guess the wheelchair is going to cost you some money. The walking is going to cost you some money. Those kind of things.
So yeah, the government needs to recognize that and provide support so that people don't have to stay on assistance or what have you, and don't have to go without adaptive aids that they need to survive, simply because of poverty. It's because most people with disabilities are in poverty, unfortunately.
One of the things that I can see that, you know, people need to be responsible when they're receiving assistance from the government and they're able to to help meet needs. But what I'm getting at is the cap that they place if you make a dollar more than $800 and outside of your disability check, then they actually start taking money back away from you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, $800 is not really a game changer, you know, when you consider what your economic needs are to rent a place, to pay for medications, to buy for food and everything. An extra $800 is probably not even a drop in the bucket in comparison. But the government should be more compassionate than saying, oh, well, you know, this person has managed to start up a business or something like that. And instead of just taking all of the assistance away at one time, you know let the person build up some strength or something before they take away, you know, or slowly wean a person off of the assistance, not just drop the ball and say, hey, you know what? We see you're running a business. We see that you found an alternative to supplement income or something, and we're just going to turn off the disability now. You know, that's not the way to do it, you know?
No. No, and the restrictions that on your life, if you're on some sort of disability benefit, you can't even leave the province for 30 days. I mean,
no.
I just find that absolutely amazing. You're discriminated against in employment. The government's not doing anything about that. And and you end up living in poverty, but you can't leave the province for 30 days. So if you get invited to go someplace, you have to decline or come back early or what have you. It's they resent giving you the support that you require. And so they attach also such a conditions to it. It's
It shouldn't be that conditional.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's why people like things like universal basic income, because it's not conditional as much. But the danger is that it can just end up being a subsidy to business.
Mm-hmm.
If it's structured badly. Guess what Finland's is? They give you a certain amount, not enough to live on. You're still going to be desperate for work, but they really need to do is provide people enough to actually survive rather than, and if you have a disability, that cost is higher. So you should, there should be programs for that as well. One of the big issues, you were going to say something?
you know, there's you're right. You have a disability. There's extra costs of health care and everything. You know, there are other costs that come along with that, and it should be accounted for. And it seems that so far governments want to discount that idea.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is they're so ignorant about disability issues generally that they don't even realize it. I mean, it's like years ago, I remember the Nova Scotia government took all the special food allowances and things like that away from people on disability benefits there, and nobody complained, and so they thought that everything was fine. And then the Council of Canadians blasted them for it, and they said, what?
I'm going to have to leave it there for a few minutes. We're going to take a break. So I'm going to, guys, put you on hold. All right?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So we'll be back in a moment. You're tuning in to the Community Living Show with our special guest, Paul Gilbert, the member of BC Disability Caucus. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of each year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting exclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adaptive technology, and more. For more information, contact your local stations about the National Access Day.
Would you like to get updates on your smartphone in an emergency, even if a cell tower is down? It is possible if the FM chip is activated in your phone. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM.
Yes, yes, you and I rocking with the best, 101.9 CITR Radio. Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze. Right now you're rocking with Jules Andre Brown, Rolly Bells, Jamal Steeles, and Horsepower. You know what it is, all right?
Yo, it's Iron Sue, man. I want to shout out Crimes and Treasons Radio, man. CITR 101.9, man. Turn up, turn up, turn up.
This is the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. I'm, of course, Kelly Rayburn on the controls, and I don't have Michael with me across from me. So he's on the phone now. So how are you doing, Michael? How are you keeping, Michael?
I'm doing really well. I had a special assignment to take care of this morning.
That's good.
And we'll have that conversation interview on next week on Tuesday.
Yeah,
but you will be there. You'll be away.
Yeah, I'll be a month off.
So, and we look forward to all the. You always bring back lots of gems when you actually come back. You know,
lots
of stories and everything.
Absolutely.
You know, so we'll look forward to those when you actually get back.
Right.
But right now we're on with Paul Gilbert from the BC Disability Caucus. So.
Yes, we're watching the government unfold as they should.
Yes.
So, and Paul, we were talking about the opiate crisis, and it reminded me that I was yesterday on the bus. One of the bus drivers was telling another bus driver this story about. There was a gentleman who OD'd on fentanyl right on the bus.
Wow.
Apparently, they have some sort of, I guess the bus drivers, they talked to the rescue workers, and they said that they have some kind of strategy that they tried to make sure they OD on a bus so that with fentanyl so that they... they know the bus driver's not going to just leave them sitting there. They're actually going to call emergency services, and they wind up in the hospital to get treatment.
Well, that's wonderful.
So I don't know, but the opiate crisis for disabilities. Go ahead and take it from there.
Well, Judy Darcy is the new Minister of Mental Health and Addictions. And definitely they needed somebody who was responsible for mental health because, well, we know that the people with mental health issues are pretty profoundly marginalized in our society. Half of the homeless people have disabilities, and a huge percentage of people in our prisons are people with mental health problems. So I'm hoping that they do a comprehensive look at what's happening and act on it. She was actually meeting with frontline workers and with people with disability who are addicts as well. It sort of spurred us on to start up that cry that everybody is familiar with about nothing about us without us, because it's really important that we have efficacious outcomes rather than just efficient ones.
Yeah.
And if you talk to a bunch of people, it's like the old poverty reduction plans that the governments have instituted in the past. They have a room full of experts and one person that represents the poor, and they don't get listened to. We want to make sure that the government is actually listening to the people who actually are affected, so they know they can devise a response that's appropriate.
Yeah. Excuse me. It's been an interesting day. I don't know if you could see this this morning, Paul. The sunrise with the big orange ball in the middle of the sky because of all the smoke from the Okanagan.
Oh, so, wow! Yes, over on the island we get nice breezes from Japan.
Yeah. So, I'm coughing because I guess some of that air is blowing in the window in my home studio here. So, so yeah, you know, but back on topic, opiates are people need these things and they should be marginalized because of. Because of a disability, and that's one of the things we always try to get through to people with this show, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, of course. That's I think that, well, part of the problem is that unless something touches you, it's hard for people to understand.
Mm-hmm.
We posted an article that we posted before on the page recently about the misperception in the media that violence and mental health go hand in hand, and they don't. The mentally ill are not generally the people who are violent. They're actually often victims of violence. There's a lot of stereotypes and a lot of misperceptions out there, because despite the fact that people might know somebody with a disability, they don't know their experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to grasp that experience for people.
Well, they don't know. Sorry, they don't know how they got there to begin with. It's an important part of that experience.
Well, with addiction, it's often trauma is the reason for the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to deal with the trauma that they're in, so they're taking drugs to cope. There's been, when I was getting my bachelor's degree at SFU, there was people there that were experts who were talking about addiction and how it should be treated, and we've not reached the point yet. And that was back in the 80s, so I'm getting on in the years. We still need. To deal with addiction properly, rather than treating it as a crime, we should be treating it as a medical issue, and we should be providing support and counseling to help people deal with the trauma that's driven them into addiction.
Right.
I know that a lot of the disabled community don't see the people who are addicts as part of their group, but usually they have mental health issues as well. So we deal with the caucus looks at every all human rights issues as relevant to us, and and certainly people with addictions as relevant to us.
All right. So also on the news today is I know you've probably heard of the forest fires in the interior. Now, Justin Trudeau has visited some of the BC residential areas on those fires, and I was just wondering if Justin Trudeau will be doing any other issues on disability matters.
I'm not expecting anything unless they move forward on the Disability Act.
Okay.
Did you see the recent news clip of John Horgan and the Prime Minister standing there talking about their joint efforts on softwood lumber, and somebody asked a question on Kinder Morgan.
Right. I heard some of those issues, but not the disability issues on it.
Yes.
Michael?
Of course, Kinder Morgan is a hot button,
right,
because the federal government wants that pipeline. And the BC government at this point is, it ain't going to happen.
No.
So yeah. I don't know how that's actually going to play out. My personal feelings on such a pipeline is it would be a detriment to our environment here in BC.
Well, you can't clean up tar sands. If it spills, it's there for good.
Right.
It doesn't clean up. That's right.
Yeah, it stays there forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but no, I mean, as far as disability issues, I've not seen any evidence that the government isn't just stalling on moving forward on the Disability Act. They had some really good consultations, and I saw that the minister responsible identified culture and that sort of cultural barrier that people face if they have a disability. It doesn't matter how accessible, how much universal design is put into a building. If they see you as an other, they're not going to hire you, the environment won't be welcoming. So those sorts of issues have to be dealt with, and the government, I think that sort of scared them, because it's going to be a challenge to actually address the fact that people are generally, if you look at all the social science, psychology research, hiring isn't based on skill. Hiring is based on similarity, and being like the people you're applying to, and that's a major problem. So they'll screen out anybody who doesn't fit a certain criteria. They have to have a progressive work history. Often they have to be employed and applying. So that screens out most of the people with disabilities off the bat before you even get into the looking at interviewing people. But on one study, if you have a disability and they can tell from your resume, only 2% of the your applications will result in interviews. So that's a major problem. And it's a cultural barrier. It's purely a cultural barrier that has to be addressed somehow by the government. I've been in favor of doing something where they change the labor code so that they try to address the issues of bias in the workplace and psychological health in the workplace. And try to make bias-free workplaces as part of as a requirement that you don't have discriminatory practices happening to employees just because they're different. But that's going to be a big step forward for any government to implement that. But it's what we need.
It is what we need. But I would. In this case, I would think that you have to get the general public to move forward before the government could move forward on that one.
Well, the problem is that most people actually believe that they people are hired based on merit. It's not true.
No, of course not.
I don't know. Me personally, the last time that that I was employed, they looked at my name and decided to hire me before they even actually saw it.
Yeah, yeah, that often happens. Mm. I remember I was hired for my first vocational rehab job, and I was completely unqualified for it.
How so?
Well, I didn't. I'd done one-to-one work with people with autism and other disabilities, and mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about vocational rehab. It's just for some reason they figured that I'd be a good match for their environment. Not that I knew anything. I had to, and they didn't even train me. I had to go off and train myself by going to the library every night, so I could understand what my job was.
Maybe I should go to the library and do my own job on radio.
That's so often the problem. I see these cases where people are hired for jobs that I know people who have competed for them, and they're really qualified for the job, and they don't get it. Somebody that has no experience and no academic qualifications gets it instead.
Well, I'm going to have to leave it there. Thank you guys for this wonderful conversation, and of course, I will see you on Monday in Victoria. So,
yes, looking forward to it.
All right, looking forward to it as well. Thank you, guys. Well,
have fun in Victoria, and everybody else, would you tune in next Tuesday? I will have a conversation with an uplifting, inspiring coach, Cameron Brown, who is traveling the world to inspire people to make an impact on our planet, a positive impact.
Right.
All right.
All right.
See you guys later.
Yep. And you can also always email us, communitylivingradio@gmail.com. I just saw somebody. I'm just looking outside. I thought that was me for a minute there on the camera screen or whatever it is. But anyways, yeah. So email address, communitylivingradio@gmail.com. You can also check us out on Facebook. We have facebook.com/CLivingRadio now. And that's our Facebook account, and we also have Twitter @CLivingRadio. So thank you very much, guys.
All right, bye.
Take care now. So stay tuned for upcoming shows, and so we will see you all next week on the Community Living Show. For all of us, myself, Michael, and Paul, thank you very much for listening in, and we'll see you all again next week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
The valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been blasting and laughing for so, so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. And I ain't never crossed a man who didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk, you know that's unheard of. You better watch how you're talking and where you're walking, or you and your homies might be lying and talking. I really hate to trip, but I gotta look. As I croak, I see myself in that pistol smoke. Oh, I'm the kind of G the little homies wanna be. Like on my knees in the night, saying prayers in the street light. Been spending most their lives living in the gangster's paradise. Been spending most their lives living in the gangster's paradise. Look at the situation they got me facing. I can't live a normal life, I was raised by the streets, so I gotta be down with the hood team. Too much television watching got me chasing dreams. I'm an educated fool with money on my mind. I got my 10 in my hand and a gleam in my eye. I'm a loped out gangster, set tripping banger, and my homies is down, so don't arouse my anger. Death ain't nothing but a heartbeat away. I'm living life do or die. Can I say I'm 23 now, but will I live to see 24? The way things are going,
snatches of music, whole orchestras play inside our heads.
And then it explodes into this enormous collage of what this present moment looks like, what it feels like, and what it sounds like.
Is rather gruesome, rather wrinkles like a walnut, and with the consistency of mushroom.
Hello, welcome to CITR 101.9.